Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Aaron Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. It's time to meet this week's guest, so grab a coffee and let's start talking success. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talking Success from a very bright yet cold Johannesburg this morning. I'm joined by Mr. Jamie Lowden from Diamond Trust Bank, DTB, over in Kenya. So it's great to have another perspective. We've obviously had Mark on from MasterCard recently talking about some of the work that MasterCard are doing across the continent. And we specifically spoke about DTB, as I have on another podcast, which if you haven't heard, with Clayton from Ukesh. And that's where my sort of introduction to Jamie came from. So Mark and Clayton from Ukesh introduced me to Jamie about a year or so ago. We've been sort of chatting and doing some work together since then. But I'm going to hand over to Jamie to give a quick intro. Appreciate his time on a Saturday morning. So thank you, Jamie, for waking up early. Jamie, welcome. Give us a quick intro. Tell us a bit about you, how you ended up in Nairobi, and what you do at the bank.
Hi, Darren. Good morning, and thanks for the invite. And it's great to be here and get an opportunity to share some of these interesting things we're doing. So I've been with Diamond Trust now for about 18 months, and joined the bank at the beginning of 2022. But this is my second sort of stint in Nairobi, because I've previously been working across Africa since about 2010. So I used to be in the British Army, and when I left, I joined Barclays here in Nairobi and spent about 5 years doing a number of different jobs before moving to a short stint in Johannesburg. And then when Barclays sold Absa Bank and they sort of separated, I went back to the UK and continued to work on Africa, but from the Barclays side, just helping that separation. And then in 2021, I was asked to come and join Diamond Trust, which, given their vision and the journey they're on, I was very sort of excited to do.
Amazing. So from officer in the army to chief operating officer in the bank. Talk to us a little bit about what you guys are doing, because that is fascinating. And I know I've been sort of waxing lyrical about this pretty much to everyone I speak to and every audience I get the chance to talk at about what DTBX are doing. And I mentioned the X bit because that's what I'd like to focus on a little bit today. We will talk about the physical side of the bank and how you're rolling out to sort of the consumer. But can you give us a bit of an overview in terms of DTBX, what the X is, why that's come about, what the vision is that you just mentioned, and where on that journey are you guys at the moment?
Sure. Well, I mean, let me put it in the context of the whole thing. So Diamond Trust Bank is a regional bank in East Africa. It's about 72 years old, approximately, and covering Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and Burundi, but headquartered in Nairobi. And, you know, what made it so exciting and why I was keen to join was the board had a vision of having seen the bank grow traditionally, over those 72 years, up until the point where it became a tier one bank with more than 5% market share, there was a desire to sort of think about, okay, as we come out of COVID, what do we need to do to now really scale and grow and become a sort of competitive bank, not just in as a tier one bank, but certainly in the top five banks in the country and across the region. And that involved a combination of sort of physical expansion and digital transformation. And what particularly excited me was the digital transformation bit, because, you know, those who know me well know I'm a bit of a sort of closet nerd on that sort of stuff. And, it was just the sort of the willingness of the board to embrace a blank canvas and come up with an idea of how they were going to do that. And so we've embarked on this journey. We call it our sort of five pillar journey, where we have sort of five key sort of strategic work streams that we're pushing in order to, in order to achieve that digital transformation. And the one to which you refer is really our partnership with the sort of fintech community. So that is what we call our sort of digital partnership strategy. And it is one where the bank is transitioning for the first time from being a traditional B2C bank into a B2B2C model. Mm-hmm. So we want to effectively extend embedded finance or financial services, or you can call it banking as a service, but effectively breaking down traditional financial services and extending them to tech-enabled companies. So not just fintechs, but tech-enabled companies through effectively an API platform and allowing those companies to then serve their customers. And we're the sort of, we become the invisible but important banking financial partner. And to do that, we've sort of come up with a sort of digital division for the bank, which is what we're calling DTBX. And part of that is we want to symbolize a sort of different thinking. So X factor growth, the slight unknown, something that's slightly different. So that X really symbolizes sort of innovation and something different. And part of that is we want to make a distinction between what I'd call traditional banking, which tends to be, whilst it's very important, it tends to follow a very traditional path in terms of the product lines and everything else are fairly well established. So whilst you might sort of subtly vary certain aspects of a product, you know, your marketing approach and the way you grow those are fairly traditional. With DTBX, it's very much a new venture. And what we want to symbolize is we are trying to work and partner with fintechs. So we want it to be a different experience. We want fintechs to think of the bank as their digital partner of choice when it comes to financial services, and one that is prepared to think differently. So how can we work together to solve a problem and really bring a solution to market where it gives that fintech or tech-enabled company the opportunity to grow? But at the same time, ultimately what we're doing is we are extending financial services to customers. So for us, that helps us achieve our larger agenda of sort of financial inclusion and really sort of helping drive society sort of forward across East Africa.
I'd love to get some examples of some of the fintechs you've kind of onboarded or you've got into the DTBX environment in a minute. But I think what struck me when we first met, or maybe a couple of times afterwards, was actually the plans for DTBX. And I think there's a lot of financial services institutions that talk about digital transformation, and it's very much focused on the technology. So how do we use technology to digitally transform, which I get. But there is another piece, and a very important piece, I think, well, pieces. I think one of them is what you guys are doing in terms of the facility at DTB, and how that is going to look and what that's going to offer. Can you talk a little bit about that? I've obviously seen the plans, and I wish I could kind of share them on here, but I'm not as tech-enabled as you are, so I don't know how to do share screen. So if you can tell us a little bit, kind of high level, what that is and what benefit that has, I think, more importantly, to the fintechs that are coming into the DTBX ecosystem.
Yeah, certainly. So I mean, first of all, just to give a sense of the sort of scale. So we've currently got now, we have 159 fintechs in our kind of pipeline community. And some of those, so we've got 18 of those are at the central bank at various stages of sort of governance and licensing approval.
Yeah.
And 13 of them are within our sandbox who are testing and developing their applications ready to sort of take to market. So it's a fairly, it's a fairly sort of strong pipeline of activity. And that includes some very, very small ones. And because we're not exclusively focusing on large players, as well as some much larger companies. But in terms of the sort of the physical facility, we are building an innovation hub, or some call it a digital factory, but either way, the sort of the concept's the same. And it really consists of probably three or four different elements. So first of all, it is a modern, open plan, collaborative sort of working space. And that is, which will accommodate both our own sort of software engineering team and our own sort of digital team. But it also has a number of incubation spaces where if we're going to partner with a particular fintech to co-create on a product, we'll be able to invite them to come and join with us to sort of base out of our factory, to work together and to use that space really to develop the product and to actually go through the sort of engineering and testing and so on. So one part of it is that sort of joint space and that sort of open space, which aims to sort of bring agile teams together. Mm-hmm. But as part of that, we're also trying to, I've had a few interesting conversations with the CEO where I've said, look, she needs to understand that, and Nassim Devshi is extremely understanding of this. So I say it slightly tongue in cheek, but I said, they will not be in there with suits and ties. They will be in there in shorts and flip flops and t-shirts solving problems.
Yeah.
And we have a laugh about that, but it symbolizes how DTBX is different from the rest of the bank, because whilst we are one bank and we are all working for one overall goal, culturally we recognise that we need to be prepared to be a little bit different to create that synergy with others. And as part of that, we're also building just things like we're building a mother and baby room, for example, yeah. as part of the overall washroom facilities, because we recognize that the way that some of this kind of deep collaboration works when you're creating a product is, you know, sometimes the time of the day becomes irrelevant and people will work through the night, they'll work late or they'll come in late. And, you know, hours won't necessarily be 9 to 5. So we want to give people, you know, the ability to have the flexibility to embrace, you know, that sort of working space. So, so that's one key aspect. So there will be a full sort of cafeteria type functionality as well as washrooms that really allow people 24/7. So showers will be in there and so on. So again, it will give people the ability to work there 24/7 if that's what they need to do or the demands of the project drive them that way. The second aspect that I think is interesting is we are building a sort of video content and podcast studio setup, because one of the things we will be launching, or we are launching under the DTBX brand, is very much a digital content sort of channel whereby we want to invite people from across the tech community and the fintech community to come in and talk about, you know, some of the challenges they're facing, be they technological, be they regulatory, be they things about, you know, talent retention, all of these sort of day-to-day challenges. And also to talk about, you know, not just problems, but also exciting things. So the future of particular trends. And obviously, clearly at the moment, you know, AI is the word of the moment. How are we going to bring that into the financial space? I think there's lots, you know, to be discussed on that front. So there is a whole content creation part that will also sit there. And then the final aspect is we are revamping our auditorium facility. So currently we have an auditorium that is that can seat about 100 odd people. So it's quite a large facility, and it has fairly standard, you know, screens that you can connect computers to for presentations and so on. We're changing all of that out. So we're putting in effectively three large digital screens, which will allow people who are presenting to have up to 5 different inputs at once. So whether you want 5 different laptops all displaying something different, whether you want supporting content on the sort of left and right screen and your main presentation content in the middle, you'll have the flexibility to do that. And in addition, we're integrating video conferencing with in-ceiling microphones and so on. And our thinking process there is if we're working together with a fintech who then wants to pitch a product launch, whether that's to investors or whether it's to press and market, we're creating a facility that will allow them to do that. So they can do it in a very sort of modern setting with some very sort of modern technology that will really actually create the right sort of sense of energy and so on. And I think we will also be looking to use that facility for sort of hackathons. And again, we want to start developing some ideas about how to do that, which are very much focused on problem solving. So we will work locally with organizations, be they sort of government, NGOs, or even, you know, private companies to work out, right, what are some of the problems we need to try and address in the local environment? And is there merit in encouraging, you know, putting out a sort of announcement to say, actually, we're inviting people who want to try and solve this to come in together, and we'll sort of work out a way, how do we encourage people to come in and try and innovate solutions that are going to address some of these challenges that, you know, society's facing?
Amazing. It's incredible. I mean, as I said, I saw the plans, and it just looks amazing, especially for, you know, what's a 72-year-old bank, to then sort of have, you know, podcast studios and YouTube studios and, these kind of facilities for women with babies. I think it's just incredible. Let's talk about some of the support that you give to fintechs. So you've got the facility, which is amazing. So let's talk through a scenario where I'm a fintech, I have an idea, I have a concept, and obviously I need a banking partner to be, maybe it's a payments platform, maybe it's a lending platform. And I approach DTB and I say, Jamie, listen, I've got this idea, got this concept. I need a partner. What do I do next? Do I have to have a certain level of funding in order to come into the environment? What is the cost involved? What's the process? How does it work?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
So it's a great question. So the first thing that happens is you know, we'll have a sort of meeting and understand the idea, the vision, and so on. Funding isn't really a consideration at that stage. It's more understanding the opportunity, the idea, and you know, how advanced it is. But effectively, we will then sign an NDA with the fintech. And at that point, we start to go through a journey. And again, depending on the maturity, it can be, you know, it can be quite quick or it can be quite long. So what we tend to see is, you know, fintechs that are post Series A tend to be much more mature, and it's very quickly they want to understand what can we offer them from a technical perspective, and then how can we help them navigate, you know, any sort of regulatory issues. I think for those that are slightly less mature, it's more about it's creating that trust partnership. So the bank becomes, you know, the trust agent for the fintech, where actually we now have a relationship where we are guiding that fintech through the regulatory journey of compliance. We're explaining to them what are the minimum standards they need to meet and how do they do that and how we will help them with that. But at the same time, we're ultimately the sort of custodian of those regulatory standards. So, you know, the central bank make it very, very clear to us that if we're partnering, we're responsible. So it becomes a journey where of sort of mutual trust, where we need to guide that fintech and they need to respect the sort of, you know, how we're saying to them is this is what you need to meet. And then after that, it really can be any number of things. So it can be either we're working together to create a product, because in some cases we have perhaps more structured ways of doing product development that a fintech might not necessarily lack. So we can guide and advise on that. And in other ways, it's far more technical, whereby they've got an established product. They see an opportunity to take advantage of the technical capability we're offering in order to perhaps scale that product or to meet a different customer segment. Yep. And really, it's about working with them to extend the technical capability to help them get into our sandbox, start testing and developing, and really get to a point where they're ready to, you know, to expose that product to their new sort of customer or segment. So there's a whole flavor that can be in there. And at the moment we are, you know, we're happy to sort of work with all types.
And then in terms of the support that you give for, put the regulatory piece aside for the time being, but from the product development, from the engineering side, are you actually offering sort of engineering support to these fintechs if they are sort of relatively early stage and perhaps they don't have, you know, a full tech team? Are you offering sort of engineering? Is there a cost to that? How does that work?
So we at the moment we're not offering engineering. That's not something we've sort of got to. I wouldn't rule it out. Yeah. The closest we've come is we have one partner who we are co-creating a product with. So there is a joint sort of effort in terms of the product development cycle. And you know, that product is actually on its way to the central bank now for approval. So we're hoping to be able to launch that soon. I think with, you know, in our experience in engaging with fintech so far, engineering support isn't so much the challenge for them. They tend to have their own engineers. It's far more weighted towards the regulatory compliance aspects, you know, because, you know, fintechs don't, you know, often they are relatively young startups and so on. And, you know, and in fact, Clayton on his, you know, on his chat with you on here, you know, said the same thing when they started. You know, they're exposed to a number of things that were just completely new territory in terms of anti-money laundering legislation and requirements. Whereas for those of us in the banking industry, it's our bread and butter. It's what we deal with every day. And so, you know, the frameworks we have are tried and tested and being developed over many, many years. They're subject to inspection by auditors internally, externally, as well as the central bank. And so we're fairly confident in the frameworks in which that we operate. And so we're able to leverage that to help guide. And I think whilst engineering remains a possibility in the future, it's much more, at the moment, the emphasis is much more on that compliance sort of landscape.
Okay.
But at the same time, because we're the ones providing the platform, there is then also a degree of technical support, not so much in engineering, but more once they're live, and if they have any challenges or they want some configuration changes in the way the platform is operating to support what they want to offer to the market, then we would be able to provide that.
So if I was a fintech and I was listening to this, I'd go, this sounds really cool. What's it going to cost me? This sounds like really expensive. How does it work from a fintech perspective? Do they have to pay to come into the environment, into the sandbox, or do you do this based on, you know, future revenues in terms of transaction volumes or whatever their commercial model is? How does that work?
So we have a standard sort of commercial model, which is based on transactions. Okay. And depending on the nature of the service that the fintech wants to consume, we will then discuss what the pricing, you know, looks like. But effectively, you know, there are, if they're to go live on the Astra platform, then there are, you know, there are sort of residency fees, and then there are per transaction fees and so on. So the key thing that we understand and we're sensitive to is we can't make it cost prohibitive. We can't make, you know, we can't put an entry barrier that sort of keeps people out, because so many of these organizations start slowly, but then scale rapidly. So you can't, you know, you can't do it in a way that you create an entry barrier. And part of that initial discussion after we sign an NDA is very much developing that commercial model. Okay. So of course, sadly, you know, it's not for free.
Sure.
But you know, we are, you know, we do our very best to be understanding to the challenges of getting a new venture off the ground.
Great. Bringing it back to the regulatory side. So once a fintech's been through the sandbox, has, with your support, gone to central bank, got a license, got whatever they need in order to operate, how do you as DTBX ensure that those regulations are consistently met? Because I think I'm not saying it's quite easy, but you can go and get sort of, certification, and then you come back and go, right, okay, I've got it now. Now I can tweak this or turn this off or do whatever. How do you ensure that there's regular compliance?
So a couple of ways. The most obvious way is we have system enforced controls. So you cannot, for example, if you were to, you know, if we talk about a fintech who wants to have a wallet on the platform, the wallet can't be opened without the KYC conditions being met.
Right.
And that's a system enforced control, which means that they can't develop their app to bypass that. There's, you know, the back end just will not allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. So there is a degree of sort of system enforced control. But then we also have an assurance requirement whereby we will be, you know, we will continue to audit and check on things ourselves, just to, you know, so that we can demonstrate to the central bank that we are taking our responsibility as the ultimate custodian of regulatory compliance very seriously. Because the greatest risk for us is for us to be found wanting from a compliance perspective, because effectively at that point, you know, the platform could be, we could be told to sort of, you know, shut it down or shut down a particular partner who's on the platform. And that's in nobody's interests, you know. Right. So actually, if everybody's working together to ensure we're compliant and we're satisfying the regulators that customers are being protected, because ultimately that's what it's about, is you know, protecting customers' rights, and also at the same time making sure that we're not creating any loopholes that can be misused for any nefarious reason.
Sure.
So providing we're doing those two things, then I think everyone can be comfortable that we're meeting the requirement. And we take it seriously.
And how have things changed from a sort of cybersecurity, info security side in the bank? Because again, you know, making this transformation or on this journey, I would imagine, I'm not the expert, but exposing yourselves as a bank to, you know, you've got API platforms now, you've got sort of people coming in. How do you ensure that sort of that security layer? Because it must be a big challenge. I know there's lots of hacks that go on sort of globally, but there's been quite a high number of sort of malicious attacks in Kenya over the last couple of years. How are you guys mitigating against that? And is that a consistent sort of whack-a-mole challenge, or how does that work?
So cybersecurity, almost like physical security, you know, continues to be an evolving landscape.
Yeah.
And I think the difference is that the cybersecurity landscape evolves much faster than the physical one. But the basic tenets are the same, in as much as there are various domains within the security landscape that we consider holistically, and we are continually sort of ensuring that the solutions we're deploying are fit for purpose across those domains. So we don't rely on any single one layer. It's a sort of series of layers. And I think perhaps most importantly, we continue to use a series of penetration testing techniques where we test the security ourselves, both from an internal perspective, but also from an external perspective, to ensure that we are making sure that any vulnerabilities, are addressed. And you raise a good point. APIs are, by their very nature that they can be called, are sort of open to sort of being misused. But we have some solutions that monitor that and alert us to, to any sort of such attempts. So, whilst I think, you can never, you can never be, you'd be foolish to sit back and think you're foolproof. I don't think anybody is. You have to constantly be engaged on this and making sure, and effectively carrying out your own regular assurance to make sure that you're addressing any potential gaps. And we've got a pretty robust program to do that.
I guess that it's probably enhanced slightly given there is now the digital side, but security has always, I imagine, been, the primary thing of anything when it comes to banking. I was talking to, I did a podcast the other day with a chap called Tawanda, and he was saying, a bank is basically, if you define a bank, it's about trust. A bank is trust, and you have to ensure that that you fully trust that bank. We were talking about some of the digital wallets in the UK. I know we're both Revolut customers, and it's great. Would I put my life savings in there? Absolutely not. Not that I've got any left, but anyway, that's a whole other subject. But I think it is about trust. I just want to bring this back because there was a point you mentioned a bit earlier on about, I know you said it a bit tongue in cheek, about sort of fintechs coming in sort of flip flops and backwards caps and, I don't know, whatever else, these fintechs wear these days. From a change management perspective and from a cultural change, I know your CEO, I've had the pleasure of meeting her once, and she's clearly fully on board. But I imagine there's probably other parts of the bank that maybe a little bit resistant or a little bit skeptical over, what this whole new fintechy thing is. How do you overcome that? And is that a journey, or is it just a case of you carry on with your traditional bank and we're going to do this? Or is there amalgamation? How has that worked?
So I think it's definitely a journey. You can't sort of, any transformation journey has cultural friction points, which you can't solve overnight. But I think for me, the main thing is it's bringing, everybody on board, along that journey. And I think, understanding that this is, when we say this is the future, it doesn't mean that it's the future exclusively and that the rest of the bank is going to wither and die. It's absolutely not. And I think, to go back to, where we started, our physical expansion is extremely important as well. Yeah. Because when we look at our customer base, what we see is we have significant numbers of customers who really place tremendous importance on that day-to-day physical contact. And so hence, when I joined the bank, we were sort of 62 branches, and we plan to be at 100 by sort of early next year. So we're already now up to 72. So we've opened 10. And we've got several more that we're going to open in the sort of later part of this year. And I think what we see is when we went through COVID, you saw everybody moving to sort of digital-only transactions. And I think mistakenly, perhaps some thought, right, that is now the future. It's going to be very much digital-only. But actually, since coming out of COVID, what we've seen is declining numbers of digital transactions and growth in branch transactions, because many, many people want to, they want to have that physical contact. And it's not necessarily just physical contact with the bank's staff themselves. It's also the other people they meet. So for many, they work on a, they're very much, their lives are sort of predominantly lived in their local communities. So they see other people in the bank. So there is a social interaction that takes place there over and above the actual banking transactions. So in many ways, the bank is acting as a community hub in certain respects. And so we're not going to, the traditional bank is not going away. If anything, it's growing and it will continue to grow. And I think what's interesting is, whilst the digital side will grow and will serve a sort of different customer segment, they're not mutually exclusive. It's So internally, to to address your question, I think yeah, there are some people who do wonder perhaps what is it all this excitement about. But we are doing our best to actually bring everybody on the journey and to, you know, to make it clear that that whilst we might have a separate brand, DTBX, for all our digital activity, the mother brand that everything relates to is Diamond Trust Bank. That overarches everything. And we won't lose sight of that. And I think, you know, one of the things we're doing is we have a sort of an educational program on sort of agile and you know, digital sort of transformation and sort of design thinking and those types of activities that I think, you know, as we permeate that through the bank, people will start to realize that this is just a different part of the bank, but it's still part of the same bank in much the way that, that perhaps, you know, business banking deals specifically with a segment called small, medium enterprise and so on. But it's not exclusive to either retail or, you know, large corporates. It's just another division. And I think it's, you know, we will make sure that everyone understands that because, you know, the synergy that we get internally is important. And actually, we've been quite successful in we've had a number of people transition from the traditional bank into the sort of the digital team. So they bring a lot of experience, particularly around product development, that they're now starting to apply in that space. So yes, it's, you know, we're all one DTB family that's driving this.
Amazing. Two quick questions. First of all, is there a consumer app as well? Is there a digital part of DTB that a consumer can have? You mentioned obviously 100,000 new customers this year. You've mentioned the branches going up to 100 branches. But is there also the ability for consumers to have sort of mobile apps for the bank, or is that part?
So we currently have a sort of mobile channel application for our sort of customers who are traditionally banked. But we're in the process also of developing a sort of digital application that will go much further in terms of extending different financial services to customers and for those that want to largely be able to live with a digital account, only that is effectively accessed through that app. So very much in the style of some of the others, such as, you know, Monzo and Revolut and so on. So it's a heading down that path.
Yeah.
It's something that's in development, but we're looking forward to launching it, you know, in the future.
I've been told that's called rebundling services. That's what I've been told it's called. Anyway, my other point was, you got me thinking when you just said, you know, actually where people come to bank physically, it's that kind of opportunity to meet and greet people. And I don't know, for some reason, I just thought about my butcher here in Johannesburg. And, you know, during COVID, you know, you do an online food order and you don't really know, you know, what you get. You order some chicken, you order some meat and it arrives. And I think going to a butcher, having that sort of conversation with the butcher, saying, oh, I really fancy doing something like this. And then you meet other people in there and they say, oh, have you thought about doing this? And, I think that whole sort of post-COVID thing now, people want to be more social. People, I think, really suffered during that period of time. And, you know, if you look at sort of fintech and financial services, yes, there's obviously, you know, a big push towards digital, but that sort of mirage of, you know, yes, it's physical, yes, it's digital, but how do we merge those two together? I think it's really interesting. There's a new bank here in South Africa, Postbank, that's going to be launching, and they're going purely branch, which is interesting. So we'll see how that one rolls out. But Jamie, thank you. It's Saturday morning, and I'm sure you've got better things to do than talk to me. So I'm going to let you go, but I've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. If anyone wants to sort of learn more about DTBX and the journey, website, the best place, LinkedIn.
LinkedIn's the best place. So we have DTBX has its own. We have a handle on LinkedIn for DTBX.
Yep.
People can reach me directly on LinkedIn as well. And happy to hear from anybody.
Amazing. Thank you. It's a fascinating journey.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and have gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.